From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In North America, call toll-free 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com.
Well, if I'd have known it was Father Mitch Pacwa, I'm not sure I would have come.
Now what did I do?
I don't know. You look like you're working hard, though. Yeah,
I am. I had to clean out the bed of my truck and just get some other things cleaned up, my coolers.
How's the ticker these days? I'm sure America wants to know.
Yes. It seems to be working.
There you go.
So the evidence is that it's still working.
You behaved yourself since the episode?
I don't understand.
Of a couple years ago?
I don't understand.
Since the unmarried man was almost made a widow?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was 8 years ago.
Oh, it was not 8 years ago.
Yeah, it was. 2016.
Are you serious?
I'm serious as a heart attack.
Good job. I set you up perfectly. We should take this on the road. Welcome to EWTN's Open Line Wednesday. Father Mitch is still with us, thanks be to God, and he will be answering your questions today. So pick up the phone and give us a call at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986 if you're outside the United States and Canada. Even if you're a cardiologist, we'll still take your question at 1-205-271-2985, and we'll even put you straight to the front of the line at 1-205-271-2985. And you can always send us an email. That email address is openline@ewtn.com. I'm Jack Williams. Pedro Quiles is our producer. Our call screener is Matt Gubensky, and Ace McKay handling our social media efforts. So if you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook, well, actually just on YouTube right now, soon to be back on Facebook in a couple weeks, we're hoping. But just type a question into the chat window, and it may find its way to us by the end of the program. And our host, you've already heard from, Father Mitch Pacwa. You know, I wish that you would have, you know, if you remember this or not, but shortly after Johnette and I were married, you were visiting a friend of yours in Tarpon Springs, Florida,
yes,
which is right next to our we live in Palm Harbor, but we're really closer to Tarpon Springs than we are to Palm Harbor proper. And I get this phone call in the middle of the morning on a Sunday, and you wanted to know if we were in town, and you came over to visit, and we were leaving, so you offered to give us a ride to the airport, and I wish you'd have cleaned out the bed of your truck before you tried to give us a ride to the airport. We didn't have any room for our luggage.
Yeah, well, sorry.
You got some emails over there?
I do. This is an interesting one. It says, "Hi, Father Mitch. You mentioned in a past episode that the first public demonstration or parade, and it was a parade, by homosexuals took place in Moscow not long after the Bolshevik Revolution. I think it was on May Day of 1918. The revolution had been in October of 1917. So it was just, you know, 6 months or so later. I'm trying to understand Lenin's purpose in permitting the march then and contrasting it with the current criminalization of the homosexual lifestyle in Russian society. Do you think that this policy is motivated by a return to good morals or more so by economic pragmatism, which is a common feature of utilitarian ideologies?" Thank you, Kenneth. Couple things. I think you're missing a couple things. I noticed a pattern both with the Communist Party and with the Nazi Party. Both of them had strong connections to quite a few homosexuals. They had this, again, the first gay pride parade. There's a photograph of it in, it's a book on Mary, I think it's on Fatima, in by Jan Gurny and Grzegorz oh, I forget his last name. But anyway, they did this book, and they're reporters from Poland, if you couldn't tell by their names. And they have all these photographs, and they have much more than they put in there, of this early gay pride parade. And what was the motivation? As a matter of fact, it's important to note that the brown shirts of the Nazi party were led by a number and peopled by a number of homosexual men. And then after a few years, the communists turned on the homosexuals. I think in 1926, they turned on them and, you know, attacked them. And then 10 years later, the Nazis did the same thing in what's called the Night of the Long Knives. They arrested almost everybody among the brown shirts, including the leader, Ernst Hutsch, I believe his name was. Ernst Trutsch. They arrested all of them and executed them all. And here is my suspicion, Kenneth. You know, homosexuals as a group frequently suffer from a lot of criticism within a culture. They, you know, are often disliked, made fun of, harmed. And that would obviously encourage a lot of disaffection toward their society. What I suspect is both the early Communist Party and the early Nazi Party used them as disaffected people to say, look, we like you, and they would help them for their political agenda until they no longer were needed. That's what I think happened in both cases. They pushed for them as political tools, and then when they thought, okay, we're done with you, they turned on them. That's my read on what happened. And, you know, we've already seen in a certain sense in our own country, the progressive left has moved from one, ideology to another, one group. They identify as groups. So they were very strong, and I think correctly so, for the rights of African Americans against segregation. But then the attention shifted to the feminist issues. And then the attention shifted to gay issues. And more recently, the attention has shifted to transgender. And transgender issues supersede the women's issues, as seen in women's sports. The left had helped women to get parity and with sports to get scholarships and placements in schools and recognition and all this. And now they said, nope, if a guy feels like he's a woman, then he has priority over the girls. And the guys, who tend to be stronger, not always, but tend to be, they get the scholarships that were once slated for women. I think all from the one group to another, when you don't have a basic principle of human dignity, then you are going to be issue hopping, and you'll be popular for a while, but the left will drop you like a hot potato.
This too will lose momentum, and it'll be the next thing.
100%. So far they show themselves as untrustworthy. So that's I wouldn't seek an alliance with them. You have time for one more?
Yeah.
Yeah. Glenn asks, how are we supposed to spread the gospel? First, you have to know it. Secondly, you should make sure that you live it. And as you live it and become a good example, look around for those opportunities where you might get to speak about Christ. Just by the way you live, that you don't use the language that some of the other people use, you have an ethics that's very clear, and the peace that you get from Christ, this shows up in your life, and people will ask you questions where you work, where you play. I get those questions, I suspect.
They notice, even if you don't think they do.
Yep.
833-288-EWTN. It's Open Line Wednesday with Father Mitch.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. If you have a question, call 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985. Or send us an email to openline@ewtn.com.
You know, Apple TV allows you to instantly stream your favorite EWTN television and radio shows right to your television. All you need is a high-speed internet connection, a TV, and the Apple TV player. Check it out today.
They're a bunch of huckleberries, aren't
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. To the phones we go. First up today is Kathy in Central Michigan, listening on at EWTN.com. Kathy, you are on with Father Mitch.
Hello, Father. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What can we do for you today?
So I have a question, and I've promised answers to some other people who don't know either. When is the tutelary feast? I mean, how would you find that information? And if you go to a St. Mary's church, how do you know which of her feast days is that church's tutelary?
All right, so it usually you say titular. It usually is by the title of that church. So the titular feast for St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish is the feast day of St. Stanislaus Kostka, November 13th, and so on down the line.
What about St. Joseph's?
St. Joseph is on April 19th. March 19th, March 19th.
Not necessarily.
Could be May 1st, but usually his feast day for the titular feast would be March 19th. But the, let's see. So that's the, now, if it is a church dedicated to Our Lady, it depends. Some of the churches of Our Lady are, for instance, Our Lady of Sorrows, here in Birmingham, Alabama. You go to the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows in September. That would be their titular feast. But there are a lot of churches. For instance, we have one, Our Lady of the Valley, and Our Lady of the Lake in another city. And there you would probably have to check with the registry of the parish. I would suspect that you can do it on the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary. Because there's no feast that I know of Our Lady of the Lake or Our Lady of the Valley. Our Lady of Snows, yes, but none for those others. So when they chose the name of that church, they would designate what the feast is and what special title of Our Lady that would be. So you may have to go back to the parish records and check that out. That's normally the way they would do that. Does that help, Kathy?
I think so, yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I think the parish office would normally have a pretty good idea.
Depends. You know,
be a good place to start.
Yeah, it'd be a good place to start. They should know where the records are.
You ready to head to the North Pole?
I love this town.
I usually don't go to the North Pole until after Thanksgiving, but we're going to make an exception for Donald, a first-time caller listening on KQHE in North Pole, Alaska. Donald, you're on with Father Mitch.
Good day, Father Mitch.
Good day. I've been to North Pole and to their Church of St. Nicholas, correct?
That's our parish.
Yep. So, what can we do for you this fine day?
Well, it is a fine day. It went from 31 below zero to one above. So we're all...
Well, I'd say heat wave. No wonder they... I thought they were going to end the global warming.
It's been like this for millennia.
Okay.
So my question is, I heard just before the program that Pope Francis was going to celebrate some saints, or... We already had All Saints Day on November 1st or 2nd. One of them was for Our Souls Day. Mm-hmm. But what is that about? Do you know?
No, the idea of a jubilee goes back to the Old Testament. And the primary jubilees are in the year 0 and year 50 of every century, because they celebrate the birth of Christ. That's the start of the Jubilee. The ancient Israelites celebrated their Jubilee every 50 years. In the 73rd and the 23rd year B.C. And then it's switched over to, I think, the 27th or 28th year and the 77th or 78th year every century AD period, because there's no year zero. There really isn't a year zero. Zero was invented many centuries later. And there's even a great, I don't know if you knew this, there was great controversy about using zero. Remember in the ancient times, they used Roman numerals, and the concept of zero never occurred to them. So that's how they did things. But now we have zero because we use a different numbering system. So at any rate, every 50 years we have a jubilee. But because not everybody lives for the whole of an adult life of 50 years where they would get a chance to celebrate the major jubilee, they have a minor jubilee every 25 years. So this is a minor jubilee. And it's a way to open up in Rome, at the major basilicas. There are four major basilicas in Rome. And when they there's a door in each one called the Holy Door that's open for jubilees only. It's always shut otherwise. So they're going to have a jubilee for that, and open up those doors. And this is a way to encourage people who've been away. And it's the purpose of a jubilee. In the Old Testament, the jubilee was to restore people back to their land and their freedom. So slaves were let free during a jubilee. If you had gone bankrupt and you sold your land during a jubilee year, they would give your land back to you so that it would be restored. And it was a year of restoration. In fact, that famous passage when Christ reads from the scroll of Isaiah, I think it's chapter 60, and he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has sent me to bring good news to the poor, healing to the blind and the lame, and a year of favor of the Lord." And that year of favor was the Jubilee. Well, we are not about restoring land so much as we are about restoring freedom from sin. And that this is a time when there are special indulgences in order to get those who've been far away, to encourage them to come back to the faith and come to the practice, return to the sacraments, go to confession, and get themselves back in a good relationship with God. That's the purpose of the Jubilees. Does that help?
Great. That's great. I thank you so much for that. We were, my wife and I, she's a cradle Catholic, and I converted and was confirmed 27 years ago. And nice. I love the Catholic faith. And I go to Bible classes, and I want to learn more and more, and you've helped me out immensely. Do we celebrate that in the United States?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of dioceses will have their local cathedral as a pilgrimage church, that if you can't get to Rome, go to your local diocese, which isn't, your cathedral is not that far away from North Pole, over there, you know, in town. So you'll be fine.
God bless you, Donna. We appreciate the phone call today. 833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number. We have one open line at 833-288-3986. Next up is Rose Marie in the shadow of the State University of New Jersey in Piscataway. Watching us on YouTube today, Rose Marie, you're on with Father Mitch.
Well, hi, Father Mitch.
How
are you?
I'm well, thank you. Is Piscataway a Native American name?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of those out that way. Well, so what can we do
near
for you?
Plainfield. Yes, I recently encountered the Seventh-day Adventist as an aide who's come to help me.
Okay.
And she was started talking about the Seventh-day Adventist, and I don't know anything about it.
Right.
But she had said, you know, there's 144,000 redeemed, and that those are the only ones that are going to be, you know, not everybody's going to heaven. That 144,000, those are the redeemed. I said, I don't know the Catholic understanding of that.
I'm going to add something to what you're saying. She doesn't know the biblical teaching either. First of all, take a look in the book of Revelation. I believe it's chapter 7. Let me just check and see if I got the right verses, where it lists the 144,000. And what do you notice? First of all, in Revelation, let me just get the right verses here. Yep, it was 7. So he sees that, and it says in chapter 7, verse 4, and I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 sealed, out of every tribe of the sons of Israel. So 12,000 from Judah, 12,000 from Reuben, 12,000 from Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Issachar, Simeon, and Levi, Zebulun and Benjamin, and Joseph. Is she Israelite?
No, she's African American.
So she cannot be among those 144,000. Let me just add one other thing. If you also go to where it says in Revelation chapter 14, you see the 144,000 with the seal on the heads. But through chapter 14, they are all men. They are all virgin men. They haven't been with women. Does that fit her? I don't think so.
No.
Stay on a second. I'll finish this up for you.
It's Open Line Wednesday with Father Mitch Pacwa.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. We're talking to Rosemarie in Piscataway, New Jersey, and she's asking about the 144,000. She has an African-American female Jehovah's Witness who's Seventh-day Adventist. Who's harping on this with her.
Yes, so we got that right so far?
Yes,
that's about her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question. So, as I said, in chapter 7 of Revelation, the 144,000 are composed of 12,000 from each of 12 tribes of Israel, right?
Right.
Secondly, in as I mentioned in Revelation chapter 14, it is all men. So it's 12,000 Israelite men. And it says there are only men, and it says that they had the name of the Father, and they were singing the song of Moses, and it says, it is in verse 4, it is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins, parthenoi. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever he goes, that these have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb. And in their mouth was no lie was found, for they are spotless. So they're virginal men, 12,000 from each of the tribes of Israel, and they don't tell lies. Ask your friend if she fits that those categories.
Hmm. I will.
I mean, they started it. I mean, that church, the Seventh-day Adventists and the Jehovah's Witnesses both make this same claim without going carefully to the biblical text. And I'm going to tell you already, what she says. Oh, well, honey, that's just symbolic. That's just, it's the symbolic Jews. Where does it say that they are symbolic Jews? Where does it say that they are symbolic men who are virgins and don't lie from the 12 tribes of Israel? Where does it, if you tell me that it's symbolic, then you're adding words to the book of Revelation. And if you pay attention to the end of the book of Revelation, you see that anybody who adds any words to this book will have all the plagues of this book added onto them. Now, she doesn't want to do that. And you don't want her to do that. And it's not her fault. It's the faulty teaching she's been getting. And I guarantee you, the woman that founded the Seventh-day Adventist Church was Ellen Gould White. And she was extremely anti-Catholic, really strongly anti-Catholic. She stole some prophecies from a Baptist minister who claimed that the end of the world was going to happen in 1844. It didn't happen, so she took his prophecy. He went off and became something of a hermit. And she was very anti-Catholic. She wrote that on the Pope's tiara are the words Vicarius Filii Dei. And if you take the Roman numerals in those words and add them up, they equal 666. Surprise, right? And the problem for her theory is this. There's nothing written on the Pope's tiara. If you want to check it out, go to Washington. You can see the last papal tiara. Nothing's written on it. You can go right up to it, walk all around it. It's in plexiglass. But if you take the Roman numerals in the name of Ellen Gould White, with the W being two V's and the Gould in her middle name being also a V, and you add up the Roman numerals in her name, it does add up to 666. See what your friend does. Go ahead and write out the word, the words Ellen Gould White, and look at the Roman numerals in there and tell me it doesn't add up to 666. And show her that. Why are you following this woman? Hmm? Does that make sense?
Yes, it certainly does.
And then if you I just want to say, because we have to go with a couple other calls, but if you go to the book of Revelation, chapter 19, verse 6, it also says that up in heaven there is a great multitude. I believe that your friend is probably a very good woman. I will bet that she is a very kind and sweet lady, and she really wants to be a fine Christian. But you and she and I will be in that great crowd. I'm not from the tribe of Israel, so I can't claim to be one of the 144,000 either. But the great crowd of saints in heaven, that's where we'll all fit in, who are saved. Does that help, Rosemary?
Yes, it does, Father.
All right. God bless you. You may need to listen to this again just to get all, you know, these verses and stuff, but it may be worth it to you.
833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Next up is Angel in Lafayette, Louisiana, listening on Christ Our King Radio. Angel, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hi, Father. Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Sha. How are you doing?
Oh, je sais bon. Roulez le bon temps.
Yeah. So listen, so you may have heard there's a little Cajun saint, like we like to call her, Charlene Richard.
Uh-huh.
She's been going through the process a while. She died in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many people attribute, you know, miracles to her, mm-hmm. and you know, healing that doctors can't understand or explain.
Right.
So my question is, why are some people, for example, Pope John Paul II, Carlos Acutis,
mm-hmm.
people like that, kind of fast-track through the Vatican and their canonization process?
Mm-hmm.
But then other people, like Charlene Richard from South Louisiana, you know, we've been waiting, you know, not my whole life, you know, she died in 1959, so, you know, 60 years. So why are some people fast-tracked through, you know, sainthood and some aren't?
You mean she died the year I turned 10 years old?
Okay.
and that's not a long time. Remember, St. Joan of Arc took 500 years. And Saint, one of my own patron saints, a Jesuit saint, Andrew Babula, was martyred in the 1600s, about 1650, and he wasn't canonized till 1930. There are a couple things. First of all, the process has to be followed, and they look for the miracles and the recognition of the miracles. That's one of the issues. And that's something that is not the Vatican fast-tracking, but it's something that we depend on God to do. So like with Pope St. John Paul, the very dramatic healing of a nun who had Parkinson's disease. No one has ever been cured of Parkinson's. And so this was a major, major miracle, and it got fast-tracked. But there's another issue. And oftentimes, the saints that get canonized a little more quickly are saints that the church needs at particular times. So right now, the internet is something relatively new. I can remember getting my first email address, what, about 92 or so. I still have it. I still use it. And, you know, the internet was just opening up. And it's a source of great information, but it's also the place where terrible sins are committed. Various deceptions, all kinds of absolutely foul things are said about people. Of course, the internet has a lot of pornography. It's a place where people are sold into slavery. And, you know, Blessed Acutus, Carlo Acutus, is someone who's needed at this time because the internet needs a saint very quickly. And, you know, Cajun South Louisiana is a place where there's great growth and in the faith, to be sure, and it's been a strongly Catholic area, and it may not seem that the need is quite as immediate as we have this need for the internet saint. That's one of the reasons that I suspect. The saint in your area may well be canonized fairly soon, but you also wait and see. Part of canonization process is that the people of God respond spiritually to that saint. There's a connection, and a devotion gets spread far and wide. And that's one of the things that I think has happened with Blessed Carlo, partly because of the need for the internet to have a saint of its own. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I think that Cajuns just got to get together instead of making more videos about the swamp people, that you get your saint people into the media and do some TV shows about them. Does that sound all right?
Yeah. Okay.
I like that show. I brought in a gator that I'd harvested, and I got to see Elizabeth when I went there. She was bringing in some gators too, but I think we'll have to find a way to let more people know about this woman from down your way, and let that devotion to her expand. That's a key part of the response for canonization.
God bless you. We appreciate the phone call today. 833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number. Next up is Ed in Middletown, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Ed, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hello, Father Mitch.
Hey, how are you? What can we do for you, Ed?
My question is, what is the illumination of conscience?
I don't know much about it, apparently. I haven't gotten it, at least not that I would know of. My understanding of it, which is fairly limited, is that this is when somebody suddenly gains new insight into either the faith or morals, and it just becomes suddenly clear to them. I would think an example of that would have been Edith Stein, when she was walking past this one lady who was carrying her groceries from the store, and the lady just happened to go inside a little Catholic church. She sat down and started praying, and Edith Stein was just amazed because nobody in either her synagogue would ever do such a thing, or nobody in the Protestant church had she ever seen do that. And it was obviously a personal relationship. Later, it intrigued her that following August, her friend had a Life of Teresa of Avila and the Catechism and a Missal. She just devoured it. And she just was immediately convinced of Catholicism, went to a local priest, followed him to his rectory, and said, I'd like to become Catholic. So, well, you need instruction. And she just had all the information she had reflected on, and that's what I would understand by illumination of conscience. She had just done was intrigued by one lady, studied, and then quickly grasped the inside of the church. The priest was amazed. And not only did he baptize her the day after New Year's, but then on the Feast of Candlemas, the presentation of in the temple, the bishop came and confirmed her. That's my understanding of it.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Matthew's up next in Atlanta, Georgia, listening on The Quest. Matthew, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hello, Father Mitch.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, it occurs to me, and I watched your show yesterday where you were talking about Marian devotion decreasing since Vatican II. And it just occurs to me that the last gospel, the Gospel of John, which used to end every Mass before Vatican II, has basically been taken out. And I was just wondering if there was a specific reason for that.
Yeah, there was. You know, for those who are not old enough to remember that, at the end of Mass, after the blessing, the priest would then go to the pulpit and read from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 1 through 18, I think it was, at least 1 through 14. I think it went to verse 18. It's the prologue of the Gospel of St. John. And it was read at every Mass. This was just done all the time, because it talked about Christ's divinity, how everything was created through him, how he became flesh and dwelt among us, and that, you know, he's full of grace and truth. So we read that, the priest read that to us every Mass. And that was, and then the priest would, the final hymn would start, and then people would walk out and start leaving the church. It was removed in mid-60s, like 66. Actually, I think it was after the council. Yeah, it was after the council was over. They removed it because it was considered a redundancy. One, you know, a big part of changes in the liturgy after the Vatican Council was to trim it down. They had a basic theory that the early church had a simple liturgy. So let's return to a simpler liturgy, because there are so many medieval accretions to the Mass. Let's just pare it down and get it down to its basics. That's why they did that. A lot of other things were omitted as well for that same reason. So it wasn't that they're against the prologue of John. We read it on, I think, Christmas, the third Mass on Christmas. That's the gospel for the daytime Mass on Christmas. And so it's still an important gospel, but we just don't read it every day. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It helps a lot. Thank
all
you.
All right.
Mike is up next in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, listening on Holy Family Radio. Mike, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hey. Hi, Father. Thank you for your ministry.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Father, my question to you is, if a priest is in rehab, like for alcoholism, and they come out and they're celebrating the liturgy again, I know a couple of priests in our diocese that I heard one used grape juice, another one used maybe sparkling wine. Is that what they still do? Do they do, or there's a special wine that they use to consecrate the blood of Christ? How does that work?
Yeah, they, of course, they have to have a reduced amount. I think they stopped them from using Welch's grape juice, I think, because it needs to be wine. But they had a very low alcohol wine. It's sometimes called grape must. It's slightly fermented, but not, you know, normally the wine used at Mass is sweet, and it's a bit stronger than a lot of table wines. I think it's as much as 15% alcohol, but they can have a reduced alcohol content called must, M-U-S-T, and that is permissible. But using things like the grape juice, even Welch's, which is actually from grapes, and certainly not colored water that's artificially flavored. You can't use that. Why would you want to? Nasty. But I think they do have to use something that's at least slightly fermented. I know that during the time of the Nazis and in communist Russia, they had permission to take raisins and ferment them into a must and use that for the liturgy, because they couldn't get wine, and certainly not sacramental wine, but they were permitted to do that. So that's what I think they do at this point. There was, at one point that you can't have any, even the slightest taste of the species of wine, so they gave that permission, but I think they sort of came back on that and got a little more balanced on it. Okay, does that help, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely, it does, Father. I appreciate your ministry again, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You God bless you. God bless you. Thank
you. Sure.
833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. So you've got this guy on the show tonight. He's a neurosurgeon.
Yes.
He's a bioethicist.
Yes.
And he's a deacon.
Yes.
This guy's got to get a hobby or something, right? Deacon Stephen Torin.
Hobby. He's got five sons. They keep him busy also.
What are you guys going to talk about tonight?
It's a very important show, I think. He has done a lot of work on especially the ethics surrounding end of life. That ranges on a wide number of topics. What do you do about withdrawing some forms of care? So when somebody's on a machine, at what point do you say we can take them off the machine? What about palliative care, where somebody is suffering a lot? What can you give them? How much can you give? Those kind of questions. Questions about assisted suicide, where the government, oftentimes, I just had a widow on a retreat this past weekend tell me how her doctor kept pushing her husband to opt for suicide because, well, there's nothing else we can do. You might as well just commit suicide. And he said, no, he's a Catholic. But take a look at that. And also other questions about people who are so depressed that they're tempted to suicide. What do we do to help them? So there's a wide variety of topics, and of course we'll want your questions because people have issues of their own to deal with.
Yep. That's tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on EWTN Radio and Television. And finally today we'll head to Brian, a first-time caller in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on The Rock. Brian, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hi, Father Mitch. First-time caller, and appreciate all you do.
Oh, thank you very much. Great to hear from you. What can we do today in these last minute?
Well, I recently moved to a new community a little bit far, about 40 minutes outside of Cleveland, and mm-hmm. I had been going to a adoration in a chapel in Parma, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
And a real nice chapel. There's nothing close by to where I live, and I know EWTN streams adoration,
yes.
Blessed Sacrament, and I just was wondering if that's the same graces.
Yes.
If you thought that was I know it's a tough question. And
no, actually, it's not so bad. Yeah, if it is a live stream, not a recorded one, but if it's a live stream, this is the best you can do to get to the Blessed Sacrament. And if ours is not live streaming for some reason, you can also go to the church at the shrine of St. Maximilian Kolbe in Poland. And they have a really beautiful monstrance. It's life size of Our Lady holding Jesus. It's the Blessed Sacrament, though. And it's just wonderfully done. And people are there 24/7. and that is live streamed. And yes, that it's an Eucharistic chapel at the church there at Nipokalanhof, and you can live stream there. It's the Church of Our Lady at Nipokalanhof. So that would be a good way to do that.
Father, would you leave us with a blessing?
Lord, bless you and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you and lead you in all of your ways by his peace. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. On behalf of our host, Father Mitch Pacwa, producer Pedro Quiles, our call screener Matt Kubensky, and our social media maven, Mr. Ace McKay, I'm Jack Williams. Thanks so much for tuning in. Back at it tomorrow on Open Line Thursday with Father Brian Murray. Excuse me, Father Gerald Murray. Until we get together then, God bless.